Welcome to Silver Shield Report number 61. We'll be talking about local communities and what we can do to found them and make them flourish. But first, I want to give an update. Freedom Girl will be launched on Tuesday, so everything looks like it'll be good. I don't know how we're going to be with the proof version, if we're going to release it now or later. They have a lot of work to catch up on the proof. I was looking at the limited edition medallions that we put out just for members only, and I saw that there were still a lot available. So what I'll do is I'll keep that available, you know, at the minimum of three, just to make sure everybody gets a shot at buying them, and then probably on Tuesday, whatever's available, I'll release it to other members, because I know there's probably one or two guys will just buy up the whole rest of them, knowing that it'll be the first limited edition, not available to the public, medallion. So if this is something that you're looking to do, now would be the time to make sure that you secure yours, because once they're gone, they're gone. That being said, I know that Rob just bought some new Columbia press. Now we're going to have four presses. What's different about this one is that it's a knuckle joint press that just constantly hammers out these coins. So the videos that you've probably seen are the ones that I've been doing. You know, they inject it in there and it comes down vertically, whereas this other one just goes bam, 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 bam. And it can do 120 per minute, I think, is what it comes out to. Whereas the other ones, I think, only do like 10 per minute. It's only good for bullion quality strikes, so that would be pretty cool to be able to just do that. I haven't seen it. I don't know how it works, but it seems like it'll be a good high volume thing. And the guy that also is working on that, I think, will be able to help us get the Bliss presses that Rob bought from the Denver Mint that can do the fractionals. So that hopefully will be something that'll happen in the near future, even though now it's almost February, and when we first started this, February was going to be the time, and now it's like 6 months off. With all the discussion last week about local communities with Glenn Beck and the Citadel and Koch brothers buying this, and I've said that massive decentralization of power is coming, that we are going to go into a much local, much more responsive, different way of living, and it's going to be dramatically different than what we're experiencing today. In fact, I would hazard to guess that basically anything that you would see as American, and it's the cars, the cell phones, the TVs, the driving around, the parking, the malls, the strip malls, all that will be rejected on such a huge basis that, you know, probably a generation from two now will wonder why we live that way. And, one of the benefits of traveling around the world is to see how other people live. And one thing I can just tell you is that I don't like living in America the way that it's been cropped up. I mean, it's, it really is almost a strip mall, highway, paved, consumeristic paradise, and from sea to shining sea, and then where there isn't, it's like poverty. There's nothing there, and that's what happens when you have a monetary system that, you know, has developed this way, that is led into consumerism, that has led into, you know, all this other stuff, that 70% of the economy and probably 70% of all the development is based around that. And now we live in this either urban area that's very expensive, very competitive, very crammed, very poorly planned, or you live out in the suburbs, and then, you know, you're driving around in your little cocoons and don't even know your neighbors. And I think that going forward with this massive decentralization of power, that there are going to be little communities all over the place, and some are going to have different, you know, ways of dealing with each other. Some will probably be more communistic. Some will be more religious and be based off of that. But there's going to be more of a communal way of living, or more of a smaller society. And I think that humanity is going to realign itself along its values and its traditions, and not by, you know, we just happen to live with each other, we happen to know each other, we happen to, you know, go to work at the same company, we happen to do this. I think that when the veil is stripped and people have nothing left to lose, they will find, be with, move to, work with people that they resonate with, when they really have no other means of, aligning themselves. So my hope is that we, our little community, will be able to do something along those lines, where we can say, hey, you know, here's this intellectual foundation we've been talking about, and I kind of get what Chris is dealing with, and, you know, I resonate with that, and, you know, we'll have the intellectual foundation, the network, and the capital to do basically anything. So I put out this idea called the ultimate exit strategy, and the idea is that, you know, unlike a lot, you know, these other groups that are starting to do something now, or the mass of humanity that is going to try to hold on to the unsustainable paradigm that we live in, with, you know, suburban sprawl and urban density and collectivization of power. The idea is that individually we all stack for a better day. And once you get past the anger phase, which, you know, could take, you know, a few months in probably the better parts of the world, and could, you know, last forever in other parts where they may never recover, the fires will burn out, and there will come a time where good people can do good things again. And wherever we end up going will be where I think it'll, where I think ultimately where we will be able to build something, you know, very unique. And I believe that the most important thing, and all this city planning and stuff like that, is really the right societal operating system. Because places where there is a lot of freedom will attract capital and good people, and they'll be able to do good things. And I think that's what the United States had going for it, you know, back during the, you know, the 19th and 20th century, where they were dramatically different than the old feudalistic worlds, you know, of the older parts of the world, where, you know, there was much more class disparity and, you know, stratification between societies. And the United States had the dream of, you know, coming to the United States and being able to do whatever you want. Well, we, I believe, are going to be able to do much, very much the same thing, and be able to create something of that level on a city scale. And I don't think necessarily, you know, the physical locality is going to be as important as having the right societal operating system. Because you can look at, like, Vegas, you know, even though it's the mecca of gambling and, you know, hedonism or whatever you want to call it, it was built in the middle of the desert and attracts billions of dollars worth of capital and interest and tourism and stuff like that. And it was just literally just, you know, barren desert. In fact, even, you know, around Vegas now, you can kind of look at it and go, really? So I think that, you know, or even look at, you know, like Dubai. I mean, Dubai really doesn't have any natural resources. Its proximity to natural resources makes it very attractive. But the fact that it is, you know, on a strip of land is, you know, they're able to grow it very significantly. And I think that we can do something of that level, you know, not right off the bat, but I'm sure over, you know, a decade or two, where wherever we end up settling down, we can end up doing something very dramatic. You know, I give the example of Switzerland. Switzerland is a very mountainous, you know, colder part of the place. And yet, because their societal operating system and freedom and secrecy and, you know, respect for individual property, they've been able to attract and retain, you know, whole society based on, you know, banking and that. And they've been able to attract a lot of capital. They're landlocked, they're in the mountains, and, you know, it's cold. So I think we'll have the opportunity of really finding some incredible land. And ideally, there's a couple of things I would like to look forward to. Is that, number one, it may not be in the United States. I've opened myself up to the idea that maybe one day, you know, the United States falls apart. Maybe having a U.S. citizenship is not in my future. You know, ideally, I'd like to rebuild and do something great. But I'm not going to close my eyes to the fact that there is a lot of opportunity around the world, and that aligning myself to a nation that I really don't have a connection ideologically to may not be in my future. And so I've left that open, whereas probably if you asked me that a year ago, I would say absolutely not. Certainly through the anger phase, I feel that as an American, I would much rather be, you know, in America when this goes down, as opposed to being the only gringo abroad, when the dollar collapses and the world shows how it really feels about the United States. In fact, one gentleman came to me, one of these panicky emails saying, I woke up, I think I got to leave the country. And he said, what do you think? And I said, well, number one, I think it's incredibly expensive, a poor use of assets. I think just getting, some of these cheaper passports are, 10, 20 grand per person. So if you have a wife or children or family that you care about, it's onerous on that level. I've heard a lot of scams where people, put their money into these banks and the money comes right out. Land deals that never get developed, passports that never get procured. And then what? What do you do? You're in one of these third world nations that, if you go ask for help, you better have more money. And then there's still no guarantee. So I told him, I said, as long as you're out of urban areas, you'll be fine. If things get really bad, I would be moving up to Montana before I move to anywhere else in the world, thinking that I'm going to run from this. But after the anger phase burns off, the landscape of the world's going to be dramatically different. I think you're going to see a lot more colors on the map, meaning that there's going to be, and it may not be in terms where, like, the United States is going to be balkanized and there's going to be, the northern state alliance of, all these New England states and all that other stuff. But there could be a very dramatic shift in where power goes, where, guys like Mike Bloomberg and Rahm Emanuel are going to be more powerful to the people that are actually in their cities than Obama would be. And that's a very distinct possibility. And, I don't think it will devolve into a civil war where people are actually fighting over this stuff. I just think that people are going to have everything wiped away and they're going to realign themselves and maybe not pay attention to higher powers, or maybe higher powers aren't going to have the monetary authority or the legitimacy to do anything. Once the Soviet Union was broken, they could not function. Off ministers had no budgets. They, often drank themselves and, things didn't move on. And, local power brokers became much more powerful. You look at the mayor of Moscow during the collapse, and he was a very prominent individual and was able to retain a lot of power. So that being said, I think that we can, open up our eyes to maybe all over the world. We do have members that are all over the world, and, maybe there will be an opportunity to do that. Things that I would be looking for is the idea that, number one, I would want access to water, whether it's oceanfront, port access, deep river, for cheap transportation. I think some of the most amazing cities I've ever been to are always near water. Water is very important for transportation and, tourism and just natural resources of having that. So I think that would be very important to have. I think the way that we would be designing the city of being a very sustainable place to live with aquaponics and renewable energy and smart design of using materials, we really could go anywhere. But the idea that a warmer climate would less energy wasted to keeping the place warm and, have longer growing seasons and maybe attract more tourism and stuff like that, I think is a very attractive thing. If we could have a place that actually has oil and gas reserves, that would be a huge bonus. And that might be actually something we actually look forward to, because when the monetary system collapses, so goes the financing, so goes the transportation, so goes the market cap of a lot of these countries and properties. And that the massive centralization of all these powers, under ExxonMobil, which is now once again the most valuable company in the world, there's going to be a breakup where, people don't show up to work because they don't get paid and properties go undeveloped. And, there could be, amazing opportunities and bankruptcies and all sorts of stuff, or maybe nations that are broke, maybe states that are broke start reclaiming their rights. I've often cited that, Utah is suing the federal government to reclaim the federal parklands that I think encompass almost 40 or 50% of Utah. Back into the state's jurisdiction where it rightfully belongs. I think that there will be an opportunity if we have the amount of capital that I think we have inside this network, and if that capital is worth what I think it's going to be worth, I think we'll be very easily be able to buy you know, thousands or millions of acres. I don't know to what level or whatever, but, you know, I think once we're able to do something, we'd be able to find out what resources are there and how best to develop in a longer plan. So the initial purchase of the Ultimate Exit Strategy is to find a property and either get sovereignty or a loyal title to it. But either way, I think we would establish a community that regardless what legal sovereignty that we have, we will be able to effectively ignore the outside powers. I had talked about having, multiple levels, you know, maybe an outside appearance that is drastically different than what the inside appearance is. I think one of the reasons why China was able to maintain so much power is that there was intrigue, you know, palace intrigue. Like, you know, the outside powers had really no clue where the power was or how to communicate with it. In fact, the reason why the Opium War started is because the emissary from Britain couldn't even get a meeting with the emperor to discuss, you know, trading terms. And when they were rebuffed, that's when the British went towards the idea that they would import drugs into the port cities and reclaim that profit through silver, thereby balancing the trade through the drug trade. But I think that that's something maybe we can discuss in the future. But any community that I would get involved with, I am really attracted to the idea of live, work, play. You know, urban areas in themselves, you know, whether they're New York City or Chicago or Detroit or, you know, downtown Cleveland, are really not laid out the way that I would see it. And there's actually a couple designs that I've been looking at. One of them is in Chengdu, China, that Adrian Smith and Gordon Guild Architectural Designs are putting together. And I'm going to put a link to this just for people to kind of get their mind wrapped around this, because this really attracts me, because it's the idea of a carless city where, you know, you could fit, I think they say 80,000 people, 30,000 families and 80,000 people with their one-child policy. So I guess that is what the math would work out to. So, you know, perhaps 20,000 families for the typical American family, all to be able to walk within 15 minutes of the entire town and eliminating the need of automobiles, and then integrating the development with a lot of green space. So as I stare at this picture, and I'll put it up there, it actually looks like the Death Star after they've been in Return of the Jedi when they're rebuilding it. I just keep now seeing it. I can't not see it now. But the idea of these kind of circular cities where there would be a really dramatic different way of designing cities, whereas, you know, if you look at the development of New York City, it was the, you know, major industrialists that, you know, centrally planned this Grand Central Station, you know, all the power terminals, the financial districts, the shopping districts, the, you know, all the stuff leads to, you know, a lot of transportation needs and driving and stuff like that. And that's like, I cannot go into New York City without just getting agitated. And yet when I went on my honeymoon, we went into Rome, which is still pretty crowded, but the idea is that there was a lot more city, there a lot more walking around, and it was more comfortable to walk around. It was just a better thing. And that's not even a great example, but, this Chengdu city, is something that I think is going to be a wise use of, resources initially. I think this would be generational wealth, to be able to, you know, design a city, to be able to have a way of life, that is more focused on people getting to know each other and having, wiser use of resources and have it be sustainable and have, you know, our food being able to be grown in the same area and reduce waste and reduce emissions and reduce stress simply by designing something much better. They even designed the city to take advantage of the prevailing winds. So it would actually funnel the winds through wind generation. So it would actually be able to generate power through the wind and having solar and stuff like that. So this is a very interesting city. And I'm going to be doing a lot more study of this going forward, because I think it's just such an awesome thing. Ironically, where the city, this, you know, eco city is being built is near one of the most polluted areas of China. I saw an aerial view of it, and the air quality is just horrible. So China, for all of the stuff that it's going on, has a long, long way to go. But this idea that we can have live, work, and play car-free cities is very attractive to me. And I think that we would be able to do that. You know, it would make for a better way of living. So I think like the initial community, I don't know how big or broad it would be at that point, would initially just be a closed community so that we're able to kind of develop, get to know each other, and, you know, really decide on who we're going to be and kind of work out the kinks. Because I think that if we get, you know, one of these, 30, 40, 50,000 cities right, replicating them all over the world would be a snap. And I think that there would be a tremendous value in that. I think that the initial plans, if we're going to start something from scratch, if being able to do this on an equitable relationship and really be government free, to me would be something that I would really like to be a part of. Whereas everybody has a stake in it, has an ownership in it, that they, you know, one of the things I think that the founding fathers had, they really just not only pledged their loyalty, but also their wealth to this cause. And I think that if we're all have a place where we say, hey, I like this idea, I'm going to commit to it, I'm going to invest in it, and I'm going to live, you know, work and play in it, I'm going to be all in. And I know that wherever I end up going, that's what I'll plan on doing. I'm not just going to say, you know, I'm going to try this out and live here for a while. I'm really going to put a lot of my energy into building something instead of, you know, websites and videos and coins. Anything that I would get involved with, I would want a value for value proposition, meaning that, you know, everybody either is going to bring in capital, ideas, businesses, labor, something along those lines. And for that, they should have a stake in the game. So, you know, this, and I haven't written this down. I really should just write it down, because when I write things down, I'm able to, you know, solve things further, and also forces me to concentrate on doing it. But the idea is that we all find a piece of property. We create an LLC or some sort of union finance company or whatever it's going to be. Put equal amount of capital into it, buy the property. It should be tremendously cheap relative to the silver that we have. And then once that's done, you know, we could start going about saying, okay, you know, how do we want to live and how do we want to be? And, you know, we can get, you know, some architectural firms that I'm sure will be working for very cheap, because all the heavily financed projects of the world would have gone bust. And the new people with the new things, we may be able to grab the plans from this Chengdu city from Adrian Smith and be able to just say, okay, we're going to do that, and, you know, we're going to do it today because we're not going to be in the middle of a war or social unrest or all the throes of chaos that China and the United States and all these other places are going to go through. And another thing that I think that is going to come out of this is that since the world economy is going to be falling apart, not only are land prices going to be cheap, I think raw material prices are going to either be cheap relative to what's going on out there, meaning that there are going to be a lot of people available and a lot of talent that will be bought for nothing. I've often cited that, you know, during the collapse of the Soviet Union, nuclear physicists were, you know, had to resort to driving cabs. And I think that we will be able to attract the best and brightest, not only through the means of, you know, offering them capital or silver, but I think that we'll have the unique opportunity of giving them equity stake in what they build and have them be a part of what, you know, this community would end up being. And I think that would bring in a tremendous amount of value. With the global economy a mess, not only would men come cheap, but machines would come cheap. You know, there's going to be a lot of material, you know, sky cranes, all that other stuff that will simply cease to have plans or means of functioning it. And I'm quite sure that we'll be able to go out and have our pick of, you know, anybody getting done. You know, I was talking to a gentleman that owns Airstream Jets. You know, the idea that these $55 million Gulfstream planes would be, not really used because either oil is going to be very expensive or, you know, aviation fuel, or simply people don't have the need of flying all over the world anymore because they can't even feed themselves. These machines are going to be, you know, out on the market for really cheap. You know, the massive bankruptcies of, you know, all these companies and the ideas that are going on, the real assets are still going to be there. It's just going to change the value structure. So I just think that between buying land and properties and having a total reset in values, and I hope that, silver being the main beneficiary of that, we'll be able to buy far much larger than what we'd normally be able to buy and dream really big. And that's why I want to try to get people's ideas and start talking about this on how would you live if given the choice. You know, I like the idea of a community. I would like the idea of being able to walk, let my kids go walk around the neighborhood, knowing that each and every one of my neighbors is intellectually aligned, that we would be able to, not have strangers in the neighborhood and be able to have them play and work and walk to school and walk back to school. And instead of this weird, reality where we go into our little cocoon cars and come out of the garage and drive down, and, it's such a weird reality. I'd rather live in a much closer environment. But I also don't like the urban life, and I think the main reason why I don't like it is because cars. So here I am, I was in the car business, and now I'm trying to envision a world, a reality, a city without cars. And I've seen what cars have done to, the landscape, but also societally what it has done. It's really divided us. It's caused a tremendous amount of energy and stress in our lives. The noise of cars, the pollution of cars, the congestion of cars, the parking of cars, the capital requirements of cars, the constant buying of, new skins and stuff like that. It's just such a poor use of resources. And I think the idea behind this generational wealth, is to build a life that does not consume as much real capital to live. So if you look at the average expenditures of the typical American, I think the total amount. So if you look at the average expenditures of a average American family is about $49,000, of which $6,000 of it goes to food. Now, if you think about how much food it costs, I wonder how much of that is designed from the packaging of the transportation of the preparation of food, and the fact that, whereas if we have aquaponics and permaculture, I think that would be a wise use of investing in food, where I think the food would actually become relatively cheap once the capital is used to create a very friendly environment to be able to do that. Not only would we be growing more food, we'd have healthier food. The healthier food would also save tremendously, I believe, on the health care, which the typical American is spending about $3,000 on. Where if we're able to have, a better quality of food, we're going to be healthier, and that's going to, lead to a much lower expense on living. The typical American is spending about $17,000 a year in housing. I think that because this new society we built, we'd have a lot of capital that we should be able to buy and build, a vast amount of housing for a relatively cheap price and pay for it in cash. And once that's paid for, it's paid for forever. The idea that we would not have a debt-based community or allow loans against these things, simply eliminates the price escalation of what that housing costs. If 30-year mortgages at 3.9% weren't available, the cash value of a house would be dramatically different. No one could afford to pay, shorter terms or pay in cash. And the market would adjust to it. No one wants to do that because it's the backbone of what we're doing. So if we're able to eliminate it, where people actually can come in and say, hey, this initial project, we're buying the land, you know, if you want to buy a property on that, you would be able to buy the property, and then you would have to pay for cash for all the cost of building it. And I think that, you know, geez, you know, a few hundred ounces of silver would be able to easily buy you a nice dwelling in this planned community. So because of just the economic reality of the debt-based paradigm ending, between housing, rented dwellings, and mortgage interest and charges, that probably makes up 40-some-odd percent of a typical American budget that would be eliminated. Maybe we cut the food bill in half. You know, maybe because the properties are so low, that people actually own the properties outright, that, you know, restaurants are much more profitable because we won't have property taxes or income taxes. You know, we'll be able to, you know, have the cost of living much lower. And then this next thing is transportation. Between gasoline, motor oil, and transportation, that takes up another 19% of the typical average American's lifestyle. And if we're able to build a city where, you know, geez, you really don't need to own a car. And if everything is sent in, you know, everything is either manufactured in you know, you live in a small community and you're able to walk there and be nice, you know, and live there, you know, think about how much more capital that you wouldn't need to, you know, to live. Like, you know, really once your housing and food and energy is taken care of, like, you know, the nut, so to speak, is so low, like you could just do whatever you want. So the idea that individuals, the whole group would go in and buy this big piece of property, you know, probably contract out to some architectural firm to build one of these type cities. And we would be able to, you know, I don't know how big or large we would do, maybe build sections of it, where we could initially say, hey, you know, things are still kind of rough. We're going to make it a small community just for ourselves, have it private. And we're going to be able to pay for cash in silver. And here's some of the things that we want. We want to be able to have, you know, a walking environment. We won't have the needs for cars. We want to have it energy independent, you know, less energy use. I mean, geez, you know, you talk about scaling down the reality of the need of energy, and so much of it actually goes into the transportation of things. I mentioned before that 6% of the typical American budget goes to healthcare. I have a strong belief that if you live in a healthier environment with nicer people, healthier food, healthcare costs are going to be dramatically different. And then here's another thing that I don't think people quite get, but 11% goes to insurance and pensions. And if you think about it, if you have a community that really cares and is empathetic with each other, you know, we would take care of our own. And I think that the need for a middleman Ponzi scheme insurance program would not be necessary. And also, you know, geez, you live in an area where you don't have to worry about mortgage interest, taxes, transportation, you know, food, healthcare. Your savings rate should be pretty dramatic, and that you would be able to do, you know, have a lot of capital that if something bad should happen, you would be able to do that. And I think that that would be generational wealth, and to be able to pass that on to, from one kid to another, to, or one generation to another, is something that would attract me. And it just starts by getting off on the right track, by owning the property outright, by having equitable relationships, by smart planning of these designs and cities that, you know, that's something permanent. That's something that your kids' kids would remember. And with the barrier set so low, I think that we could also have just those two laws: do what you promise and do no harm. I think one of the reasons why there's so much regulations and, you know, laws and taxation and oversight is because it's a collective trying to control the individual, and we would be an individual first over the collective. Even the physical way that we live would allow that to become a reality. I've said before that depending on how this works out, it could be just a private community. And the reality is all we would have to do is take care of, you know, the housing, the energy, and the food production. And that would bring us to some sort of at least survival level. But I think that we can develop the city to be exporters of or business friendly and attract some of the best and brightest minds out there. So there's a lot of industries that would just naturally flow into there. Number one, I think banking would be easy. If you're telling me you have a new community that you know, got way ahead of the curve, invested in silver, were smart enough to play their cards the way that the way that we're planning on doing, bought a community. They're outside the jurisdiction of all these other governments. They have their act together. They have a high level of integrity. I think, you know, people would, you know, even if they were in foreign countries, would trust us with protecting their capital. And I think that we would end up being the new Switzerland, whereas Switzerland's been giving into the United States global empire and you know, the whole UBS scandal. Even the Cayman Islands are starting to come clean as governments become more rapacious for capital. You know, we're talking a whole different paradigm. I think that we would be able to easily brand that. And, you know, perhaps these silver coins are really just great advertisements for the silver investors out there to say, hey, there's something different going on with these guys. Let me look into what they are. So another idea I've been kicking around is, okay, the group buys this big piece of property. We set about developing it. We put up the capital for it to actually build it. How do we go about, you know, dividing up ownership? Because I certainly don't want a, you know, corporation owning my property or stuff like that. So I think once the development is done, it will be sold off to, you know, a value added. And I think that the value of the individuals to repay the initial investors would be tremendous. So hypothetically, say we took 100,000 ounces of silver to buy a land and it cost 200,000 ounces to develop a really kick-ass city. The individual parcels of land or apartments or buildings or, you know, things could be, you know, 4 or 5 times what the initial investment was, the initial thing was, and you end up selling those to, you know, to individuals. So hypothetically, you know, I would have to put in like 3,000 ounces to of my versus everybody else's to buy the land to develop all this, and say I wanted to buy a property out of it, out of this big finished thing. I may end up buying, you know, another 100, 400, 500 ounces to just to get my, you know, my house. Or my building or something that I wanted to build there. That all told, all those individuals would pay back the initial investors at a 4 or 5 times level because the value added of, geez, now you have a tax-friendly property that is has a low cost of living, really great people. Like the value add on just that project alone being done would be tremendous. And I think that all the initial investors would be paid back. And that would allow for further expansions later on and have a great way of, you know, having people have a stake inside the system and really caring about it. So the idea where I think that 100% ownership of the property would go to the individual that's buying, you know, the house, for example. But I think that there should be some mechanism to allow a constant income stream back to the initial founding fathers or investors to help maintain, you know, the roads and the utilities and the plumbing and all, you know, all these kind of like more larger projects, like, you know, having a tram system or, you know, something where it would be able to, you know, maintain those kind of bigger things. And I think that that's where if a property is sold or flipped, you know, maybe 10% of that property or that purchase price would go towards the big kitty to take care of those type projects. And that would be, you know, owned by the initial investors and those kind of founding fathers or founding mothers. You know, I don't know. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of women that are going to be interested in doing this. Would be able to be the, you know, the people who are going to maintain the quality of this. I think also when you have this time frame going on, we will be able to get the best quality buildings. If you look at some of the greatest architecture that was done, it was always the private individual families and monarchs and, You know, they're very individual wealthy people that created the most spectacular architecture. And I think no matter what I get involved with, I want just absolutely kick-ass architecture. I love Italy. I love France. I love, you know, even, you know, old London. You know, these buildings are just spectacular things that last for generations. And I think that if we invest in really great, unique, distinct architecture that's built from top quality materials like stone and, you know, be able to do these type things, you know, we can have an attraction that people would just want to come to see what it's like to live there. So this car-free city, if you kind of just picture on one side, there would be, you know, there would be roads, you know, cobblestone type roads. And they, you could drive cars through there, but we wouldn't have any driving traffic. We could have a tram system, you know, working there. But the idea is that they'd have these little blocks of neighborhoods where the street side would be the public side. So maybe you have storefronts. Maybe you have your just, you know, your typical front door go out in the street. And that would be more of like an urban feel. So there'd be street and building, whereas the backside of all this development, and if you think about a city block like in Manhattan, you know, a city block, you know, really is all building. Like there's no inside of it, but the way that these cities are being built, you know, these sustainable cities are that the street facing is the commercial side, the urban side, and then in the backyards of a block, it would all be green space. So your back door would literally go right into the street, into the center of the park. And that the inside of every block, would be surrounded by your neighbors, the buildings that are, make up the outer rim of the block, but the inside of the block would all be green space. And that's where, you know, it'd be safe for your kids to go out and play and move around. So it's kind of a neat thought, and the more I thought about it, I was like, wow, that really resonates with me. I like that idea a lot. And then, you know, think about the community that would be building up. You know, you're going to have, you know, older people and younger people mixing. There's be much more generational mix. There'd be, you know, people would be able to be, it would be easier to be helpful. You know, when we get in these little suburban cocoons like now in Cleveland, you know, it's January 27th and I'm stark raving out of my mind. Like, I just want to get out of here because I've been indoors for like 2 months now and it's afraid to go out because everybody's sick and, you know, all this other stuff. That it's just not that easy to go out and be social. It's not that easy to go out and do stuff. But if you literally live right next door to each other, I mean, dropping off some soup is not that hard. And, you know, you're not accustomed to getting in the car and going out and doing something when you can just, you know, literally walk over. Maybe that's part of your daily thing. You're walking around the block and, you know, you can go stop and talk to people. One of the things I love about Europe is the whole cafe thing where there's just people outside sitting and, you know, in Greece they do a lot of smoking, but, you know, going out and having that sense out there. And I think that that's something that I would like to do. And it's not really found in any of these current cities. The idea of live, work, and play, and for schooling, that you know, you design a city right that everybody should be able to walk within everything that they need within 5 minutes, and this would not be a city that would have a lot of tall buildings. In fact, I think one of the defining characteristics of some of these cities are the fact that there's only like 4 or 5 story buildings throughout the whole whole building process. Because it leads to a better way of life. It's a healthier environment. It's less, you know, people looking down upon each other and centers of power. And, you know, that seems to be very endemic of, you know, this debt and death paradigm. And I think that a more sustainable community, a lower, you know, thing would be something, you know, I would resonate with. The idea is that, you know, yeah, you'd be able to walk within 5 minutes of everything that you need, but if you needed to get to other parts of the town, by the time you get to the 5 minute mark, you should be able to get onto a, public tram system. So I know a lot of the European systems have this, where they're like the San Francisco trolley cars, but a fancier version of that, where it would take you through the city and it would be a pretty rapid, transportation of that. And then once you have the public tram take care of the inner traffic of what people need to move around, and maybe there's a commercial tram that would actually deliver packages and stuff like that. You'd still have the opportunity. So, like, you know, one of these things I thought about, it was like, okay, well, what about construction vehicles and stuff like that? I think, we would obviously allow commercial vehicles to be able to, go do about their business, but maybe we'll make them electric vehicles so there's no, like, you know, diesel trucks running through the city and kind of defeating the purpose of everything that we're doing. Or maybe we have, something else along those lines, but I think that that's something that we can get rid of there. And then from there, the public tram, you could either go right out to a rail station and the rail station could take you out to the airport. So the idea is that the closer you get to the people, the less intensive the transportation gets. So there's no reason to have the airport, you know, right there. You can maybe have it on the other side of the hill or further away and maybe have a rapid transit system to bring you there and develop it that way. But these are all the thoughts that I'm putting together. I know this is a little bit forward, but allow a guy to dream for a little bit. It's the middle of winter here. It's a little gray. So I thought of bigger and brighter things. So let this stew around your mind and put some comments in it and see where we can go with this. Thanks.